Crowds received Jesus with open arms because they had been waiting for him. And now a man named Jairus, a leader of the local synagogue, came and fell down at Jesus' feet, begging him to come home with him. His only child was dying, a little girl 12 years old. As Jesus went with him, he was surrounded by crowds, and there was a woman in the crowd who had hemorrhaged for 12 years. She had spent everything she had on doctors and still could find no cure. She came up behind Jesus and touched the fringe of his robe. Immediately, the bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. Everyone denied it, and Peter said, "Master, this whole crowd is pressing up against you." But Jesus told him, "No one deliberately touched me, for I felt healing power go out from me." When the woman that Jesus realized knew, she began to tremble and fell to her knees before him. The whole crowd heard her explain why she had touched him and why she had been immediately healed. "Daughter," he said to her, "your faith has made you well. Go in peace." While she was still speaking to her, a messenger arrived from Jairus' home with the message, "Your little girl is dead. There is no use in troubling the teacher now." But when Jesus heard what had happened, he said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Just trust me, and she will be all right." When they arrived at the house, Jesus wouldn't let anyone go in with him except for Peter, James, and John, and the little girl's father and mother. The house was filled with people weeping and wailing, but he said, "Stop the weeping. She isn't dead. She's only asleep." But the crowd laughed at him because they all knew she had died. Then Jesus took her by the hand and said in a loud voice, "Get up, my child." At that moment, her life returned and she immediately stood up. Then Jesus told them to give her something to eat. Her parents were overwhelmed, but Jesus insisted that they not tell anyone what had happened. All right, so we've been looking actually, and even in youth group, we've been looking at faith, how faith is characterized. We've been looking at faith, how faith is characterized by, and in particular, at least in youth group, we've been looking about how faith had interacted with fear. And so today's story of these two characters, we're also going to look at faith and what we can extract from their faith, what we can learn from their interaction with Christ and faith. So let's take a look at what we're going to look at is a few principles that we can draw out from these characters as we kind of walk in their shoes. First principle we can look at is that of need. All right? People had heard of what Jesus had done. So what had happened is all these folks are now, the word is getting out of what Jesus can do and that he is somebody different, somebody amazing. Jesus' ministry is building. Not only his ministry is building, but also opposition is building against him. But as he crosses the lake, a crowd comes out to gather and to welcome him, with open arms because they knew that something was going on with this guy. He was not just a mere prophet. He just was not someone who had great wisdom. He's not just a teacher. He had power behind what he was doing. But there was one in particular who met Jesus who was extremely distressed. Jairus' 12-year-old daughter was dying. He was a ruler of the synagogue and probably a man of social standing, a leader of the city. But the way that he made his request by basically falling down on his knees and lowering himself down before Jesus' feet showed absolutely no hint of any pride or any social status. He was not looking around to see how people might respond. This upstanding man in the community throwing himself down at Jesus' feet. It was his desperate one last lifeline for his little girl. See, Jairus had a need. Even though he was a man of social status, he had power, at least in a religious sense, he was in desperation. He was in a spot in his life where he had tunnel vision, all right? And to make the situation worse for him, in the middle of his desperation, as he reaches out and throws himself down at the feet, the crowd surrounds Jesus, and he's kind of like maybe pushed to the side a little bit as he makes this request. But even in the midst of that, while he is throwing himself down at his feet and begging for Jesus to come back to save, desperate. And there in the crowd, we find another desperate soul. A woman who we are told who's had a flow of blood for 12 years. She'd spent all her livelihood, everything that she's ever earned, everything that she's ever had, just to find a cure for her condition. And it seems like the physicians were all too willing to take her money and eventually continue to leave her without hope. What she had was an abnormal bleeding from the womb. In Mark's account, it's twice, it's called a plague. So can you imagine this? For 12 years, a steady flow, and she grows as a person, losing this much blood, you go continually weaker and weaker, becoming more and more anemic as the years go by, slowly losing more and more hope. You know, in the story that we read, there's no mention for her. I mean, we can't know for sure if she had a husband. But if she had one, in a day where getting out of marriage is easy as a reason, if the wife had burned a man's breakfast, you could say, okay, I'm ready, I'm done. That's a good enough reason for me to divorce. And all you had to do was basically hand your wife a handwritten note declaring your intention and basically declare in front of people, I divorce you 3 times, and that was the end. So most likely, if this woman did, in desperation, if she did have any kind of support from a husband, most likely he was long gone. The fact is, according to Jewish law, because of her blood flow, she could not touch or be touched by anyone. 3 things in Jewish day touched by anyone. 3 things in Jewish daily life could make a person ceremonially unclean: touching the dead, menstrual bleeding, and leprosy. So this woman was totally isolated. Desperate. I mean desperate. Her condition drove her away from her family, her friends, and even her place of worship, as she could not enter the courts, as she was continuously considered unclean. And again, I'm sure there was every doctor who was eager to take her money. She was giving out as much as she earned. She was giving out so that she could find some sort of answer. Luke would know this the most, you know, because Luke was a physician. As he writes this, he must be thinking of her and thinking of all the witch doctors that she must have gone to try anything, only leading her into poverty. And my guess is, if you place yourself in her shoes, she probably had to deal regularly with bitterness, with anger, with doubt. Hey God, where are you, Yahweh? How come I am in this spot? Why me? Why for 12 years I've prayed, I've looked for answers, I've sought, and yet nothing, nothing. For both Jairus and this woman, faith was born out of need. They were looking for something. They were thirsty. And maybe for you, maybe you're not quite in this spot, but sometime in your life, hopefully before you became a believer, when you realized your need, when you were desperate. And again, even as you walk with Christ, there may come a time when you become, God even allows circumstances that you might become desperate, that you might reach out in faith. There was a couple that Sarah and I were friends with a couple of years ago, and we actually did some counseling with them, and as we were leaving the Chicago area to come here, he found out that his mom was dying of stage 4 cancer, and it didn't look good. And kind of neat to watch was she was a believer, and her son, our friend, was not. But even as an unbeliever who was seeking, but still yet an unbeliever, it was neat to watch him reach out to God, looking for answers, to kind of stretch out just like the characters that we read about today, or reading about today, looking for answers, calling out to the Lord. Does your need today, does some need that you have, either for direction in your life, for some relational problem that you might have, for some crisis of faith, does it cause you not to draw in, but does it cause you to like these characters? Just, if I could just touch his hem, if I could just touch his clothing, I'll be healed. Faith is born out of need. Here's a second principle. Faith is not only born out of need, faith demands a response. Jairus is already en route with Jesus, but the woman, though she has had her hopes dashed many times, decides that Jesus must be in some way different from all the other physicians, all the other witch doctors she's seen. There must be something about him that she has decided in her mind that would be different. If only she could just touch his hem, just the side of his clothing. The Bible says that faith comes by hearing. Romans 10:17 says, so then faith comes by hearing, and hearing the word of God. True faith, and we talked about this even again in our youth group, is it demands a response. It is not enough for us to hear the word. We must believe it and do it. Again, as at least the couple of stories that we looked at youth group, it was like Peter who, after Jesus beckoned him, invited him to come out, the response for Peter was to take a step out of the boat into the water. He could say, I believe you, Jesus. I believe that you'll support me. I believe that you'll uphold me. And maybe this is where you're at right now. You might be in a spot where you say, I believe that you will come through. But Jesus is wanting more. He's wanting you to step out. He's wanting you to take that faith, that action where you actually do get out of the boat, or whatever that might be in your life. As for this woman, she not only heard about Jesus, she believed what she heard, and she had decided in her mind that she would just simply touch him, she would be healed. Matthew 9:21 in a different account says, for she said to herself, if only I may touch the hem of his garment, I will be well. So she literally said, I believe it, and I'm going to act on it. But you think about her situation, you think about where she was in her life, and she had obstacles to overcome in her faith, even to get to the point of touching Jesus. of reaching out to him. She had to overcome physical weakness. It must have been difficult for this woman even to get out of bed in the day. It is like someone who's maybe gone through chemotherapy, heavy chemotherapy, and is just sick, cannot move, weak. A second obstacle she had to overcome was she had to face her own hopelessness and despair. And I think that this might be even a bigger one for us. You know, oftentimes we are in a situation that causes us hopelessness and despair. And this is not like a physical thing that we need to overcome. It is something in our hearts that we need to overcome. Where she has been burned so many times. She has lost trust so many times. How can she reach out and trust Christ one more time? These kind of obstacles can really bring us down sometimes. A third obstacle she had to overcome was really just another physical obstacle, a mob around Jesus. She had to force her way through this crowd. But in a way, because of what she was doing and the condition that she was suffering from, she had to move her way through the crowd in a way that didn't draw attention to herself. After all, she was a woman with a problem who rendered her unclean. It was embarrassing. It was extremely shameful. She didn't want to have to proclaim why she wanted to reach out and touch him. She didn't want to have to explain anything. She just wanted to touch him, be healed, and then get away. Again, the last obstacle that she had to overcome was a social and religious stigma that she didn't dare not touch Jesus for, in doing so, would make him unclean. So she wasn't even supposed to be in a crowd. But she did overcome these obstacles, and she finally got within reach of Jesus. So maybe for you, think back to some of these obstacles. Maybe for you, there's something for you, deep inside of you, that is preventing you from receiving him, from touching him, from reaching out to him. Maybe it's shame. Maybe it's embarrassment. You know, maybe you need help. The way that you would reach out to him is through the church, through other people. But you don't want to share it with other people because of shame. Because of pride. And yet that is the way Jesus would touch you. That is the way Jesus would begin to heal you. In verse 44, we are told that she came up behind him and touched the fringe of his robe, and immediately her flow of blood stopped. Again, she came, she was just trying to just touch him secretly so that she could be healed and move away. She wanted to be as inconspicuous as possible. And sometimes for us, when we have something that we're ashamed of or embarrassed of, this is how we want to be too. We don't want other people to know. We don't want to come in our weakness, in our vulnerability, and simply go to Christ. But you know what Jesus did? He didn't let her pass by. He didn't let her go. And our concern this morning is that maybe there is something in your life that you need his healing, and you're letting him pass you by. For some reason, you're moving away from him. So faith demands a response. It demands that you take a step out. But the other thing is that faith cannot remain anonymous. All right. In verse 45, Jesus asks, "Who touched me?" This is a strange question, isn't it? Very odd. Very odd time to ask. Very odd as being the God of the universe. Is it really possible that Jesus didn't know who touched him? I don't think so. He knew what had happened, and he knew who touched him. He asked the question. Actually, he asked the question for her sake and for the people's sake around her. Initially, no one admitted that they had touched Jesus, even though there was a lot of people around him. But Jesus would not let the matter drop. In verse 46, Jesus says, "Somebody touched me, for I felt healing power go out from me." Can you imagine that? I felt some power, like, leave me, you know? It's pretty amazing. And the disciples are confused at this time. Like, Jesus, you got to be kidding. There's like 30 people around you. What do you mean, who touched you? There's like everybody's touching you. How can we possibly know? I imagine Peter, maybe most outspoken of the disciples, rolling his eyes and say, "Wouldn't it be easier to ask who didn't touch you, Jesus? I mean, there's only 100 people around you." Seems like a perhaps impossible question to ask, but also Peter might be asking, what difference does it make, really? And yet, meanwhile, if we can't remember the story began with Jairus asking to, "Hey, Jesus, would you come and save my daughter?" He must be like, "You're asking right now in the midst of a crowd, I've just asked you to come save my daughter, and you're asking right now in the midst of a crowd who touched me? Who cares?" Right? Who cares? My daughter's dying. I need you now. Let's keep moving here. Precious time was being lost as the life of his daughter slipped away. It must have been thinking, "Come on, Jesus, let's go. Who cares if someone has touched you?" And I wonder sometimes if we are in the same position as him. You know, he is probably questioning at this point, "I have an emergency," and yet he has to deal with God's timing. There are some times when we're waiting, like he was. Like, "God, this seems to be a very important situation in my life right now, and yet you are not responding. I don't hear you. I don't see you moving right now. Where are you? Why don't you come with me? I've only been waiting for you for 10 minutes now, for 2 days now, for a month now, for 6 months now." In the same way as he, you and I often struggle to understand his timing, even though Jesus was calm and simply asking, who touched me right now? Ultimately, for faith, it means trusting in his care. Also, it means accepting his timing, which for us can be an eternity sometimes, can it? Have you ever been in one of these situations where you're just like, "Man, I've been calling out to you for so long. When is it going to be?" In Mark 5:32, we're told that Jesus looked around about to see her who had done this thing, who had touched her. It literally says that he looked penetratingly into the crowd. He was kind of searching and looking for that person who would step forward. And she had not expected to be detected. Again, her plan was just to touch and leave. But when Jesus had turned and asked the question, she knew that he knew. And I imagine if this woman had taken a great leap of faith before, now the desire is not of faith, but to escape. Like, get me out of here. Remember, the penalty for deliberately making someone unclean is death. And this time, it was a scary moment, extremely scary moment for her. Perhaps she had thought she had, "I have done wrong to Jesus." In verse 47, it says, "When the woman realized that Jesus knew, she began to tremble and fell to her knees before him. And the whole crowd heard her explain why she had touched him and that she had immediately been healed." Why was it? Why did he stop? Why did he have to draw her out in such a shameful, embarrassing thing for her? It was not the miracle that Jesus wanted to make public. It wasn't that he was saying, look what I did for her. But rather, what he wanted to bring light to was her faith. That if only she reached out in desperation, she was reaching out in desperate faith. And I want all of you to see this kind of faith that she had. Jesus refused to allow her to go without a confession of faith. And still, for us, Jesus requires a confession. Elsewhere, Jesus said in Matthew 10:32, if anyone acknowledges me publicly here on earth, I will openly acknowledge that person before my Father in heaven. He still, for our faith, wants us to confess openly that I trust you. I trust you with my life, with my eternity, with all that I am. Paul also says, for it is by believing in your heart that you are made right with God. And it is by confessing with your mouth that you are saved. So faith cannot remain anonymous, all right? Here also, faith revealed is faith rewarded. Verse 48, daughter, he said to her, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Jesus was, if you look at the situation, he was incredibly gentle with this woman, very tender with her. This is the only place in the Bible where he calls a woman daughter. And Jesus rewarded her confession and her faith by telling her, go in peace. We have heard a couple of times, Joe Chilufo, who's come in here and spoken multiple times, his wife, he has shared the story, and his wife has shared the story of how, again, she was in a spot where the doctor had given her a diagnosis that was grave and that she needed surgery immediately. And what they did as a couple is they prayed throughout the night. And I gotta say, I love hearing this story. I love hearing this faith, because again, I think of myself, and sometimes I think I would be like, okay, let's get into surgery right away. But they were like, no, let's go to him right away. And they prayed throughout the night. And by the morning, they came back to the doctor fully. The doctor said, they told the doctor again, hey, we're going to pray before we say yes to the surgery. We're going to pray about it. It's like, suit yourself, but you'll be back in the morning needing the surgery. Sure enough, they went back to him and said, and as he examined her, she didn't need the surgery anymore. Faith revealed is faith rewarded. Okay, the last principle of faith. Faith holds on when reason says to give up. You'll also remember the healing of this woman occurred as Jesus made his way home to Jairus, whose daughter was deathly ill. And our final principle is seen in his life, okay? Previously in verse 41, we saw that his request for his gravely ill daughter and how Jesus began his journey to his home only to be interrupted. And as we pick up the story in verse 49, we see that things have taken a turn for the worse. While Jesus is still speaking with the woman concerning her healing, a servant comes from his house with bad news. It says, while he was still speaking, someone came from the ruler of the synagogue's house saying to him, your little girl is dead. There is no use troubling the teacher now. I imagine his heart just sank. After hearing this news of his baby girl, his 12-year-old daughter. As long as she was only at the point of death, there was always hope for him. But now there's none. It is one thing to believe that, you know, that she might be have a chance still, that she could still be healed, but it is another to believe that she could somehow be brought back to life. Imagine what pain and disappointment he must have felt at the moment. But Jesus quickly assures him in verse 50, but when Jesus heard what had happened, he said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Just trust me and she'll be all right." He tells him, basically, don't believe. Don't be afraid. Only believe. In the Greek, if you break it down, it's called what's called the present imperative active. It literally means start believing and do not stop believing. Faith is not the belief that we will get what we want, but it is ultimately the belief that God knows what's best and He knows what He's doing. Then Jesus, again, finally arrived at his home, asked just that the parents and the inner three disciples, James, John, and Peter, come into the house. He tells the people in there to stop crying as there's mourning and weeping as she's just passed away. And then Jesus takes her by the hand and says, calls her to, I think she says, "Rise up, little lamb." That's how it's literally translated. And he raises her back to life. And again, the question is for us, like, I guess I have two questions that come to mind. Why did Jesus do this? You know, why? Was it for the girl's sake? I mean, was it for her sake that, you know, maybe he had something more for her, something he had planned for her? In this case, I don't think necessarily so. I think it was for the parents' sake. And also, I guess the other question that maybe all of us immediately that comes to my mind is, did he do it so that we would expect the same thing today? And the answer is, I don't think so. In verse 56, Jesus tells the astonished parents, the surprised parents, to tell no one that it happened. And you might be thinking, okay, we talk all about this faith thing, that faith holds on when reason says to give up. And it's fine and wonderful to hear these stories, how he healed the woman and raised the little girl back to life. But you may be thinking, I don't see that in my life. I know at least most of us here, I don't think any of us are sick. But maybe there's some out there and be like, I am still sick. Or my loved one died and they are gone. And even though I want them back, I don't see them coming back to life. Why doesn't he respond that way today? I think the answer is that he healed this woman and he raised this child in order that we might have a different view of sickness and death. There's a theologian named G. Campbell Morgan, and he spoke from his own experience. He had lost his daughter. He said this, "I can hardly speak of this passage or this matter without becoming personal and reminiscent, remembering a time 40 years ago when my own first daughter lay at the point of death dying. I called out to God then, and he came, and surely he said to our troubled hearts, 'Fear not, believe only.'" He felt like God was telling them, "She'll be made whole." Well, for him, his daughter was not made whole. She passed away. At least she wasn't made whole here on earth. she passed away into the life beyond. But he did say to his daughter, he felt like God was saying to his daughter in another way, get up. Because even though that there is sickness and death here, she was made whole in the life beyond. He said, she has been with him for all these years as we measure our time here, and I've missed her every day. But his words, believe only, has been the strength through all these passing years. So for us in this case, in many ways, faith shows us something beyond what we see here. Faith brings us on to the next, basically into eternity. And just like Jairus and the woman, Jesus is still looking for hurting people. He's still looking for people who, like them, are seemingly without hope but are reaching out in any desperation of faith to be moved, to see his power. To the brokenhearted people, to the damaged, to the frustrated, to the hopeless, to those who cover up all their hurts. People who have been hurt so many times that they no longer want to trust anyone. He is looking for people just like that. The cool thing about God is that, if he just had love for us and no power to do anything about it, it'd be really hard. I mean, it'd be great. If someone loves you, it's great to be loved, right? But if they had no power, if God had no power to actually move in our lives, to transform us, to deliver us, to give us victory, it would be kind of worthless. And yet, if God had all power and yet no love, it'd also be a dangerous situation. But brothers and sisters, you can have faith in him because God has both. He has love and power to change your lives. We just need to step out in faith, and he can help us do that. Let's go to him in prayer. Heavenly Father, we maybe at some time in our life, we've experienced something like these characters that we have seen. And maybe not yet. Maybe there is something you have in store for us that you will build our faith. Maybe our faith is lacking and weak, and you want us to grow in our faith. And so maybe you might even allow, or are allowing now, a circumstance in our life where we call out to you in desperation, where we reach out just so we can touch the hem of your robe, just so we can have a small piece of you, so that we can experience the power that leaves you and enters into us and into our circumstance and can change our lives. Let us be men and women of faith. In Jesus' name, amen.